Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening. It's Maria Boynton. My guest today, Wyomia Tyus, the Olympic gold medalist, three-time Olympic gold medalist, right?
Right. That's correct.
From Griffin, Georgia.
Yes.
I am holding your book right now. It's called Tiger Belle, the Wyomia Tyus story. And it talks about how you are a woman of conviction. You went to Tennessee State University, became an Olympian during the Civil Rights era. Ladies and gentlemen, none other than Wyomia Tyus.
Thank you.
I'm giving you an ovation because your name has been in my mind for a number of years, not only because I know your niece, Tina Tyus, who is a longtime friend of mine, but because of what you stand for. Today, it's a conversation with Wyomia Tyus, Olympic gold medalist, 1964, 1968. Just tell the people the medals that you have.
Well, I went to two Olympic Games. The first Olympic Games I went to was in Tokyo, Japan in 1964. I was just 19 years old. And my coach, who was at Temple from Tennessee State University, always had said to me, well, you know, you're young. A lot of people try to make an Olympic team on their first time out. That doesn't happen. So we're not looking for great things for you. We hope that, you know, if you make the team, that would be fine. I said, okay, thank you, Mr. Temple. Mm-hmm. And we go to the Olympic trials and I make the team. They take three people in each event. I got third. And when we got to Tokyo, Japan, he's the coach for the Olympic team there. And he says to me, well, we're not looking for great things. We're just going to groom you for 68. We're looking for you to do great things in 68. And as we trained, because we were there for a month, and as we trained, I felt I was getting stronger and stronger. But I didn't worry about that. I'm still looking at 68 because that's what I've been programmed to, so to speak. Then we started the Olympics started. We have different heats, and every heat I ran in, I won each heat. And I get to the finals, and he's out on the track, and he's talking to me just before we go to run the finals. And he said, well, Tyus, he always called us by our last name. Mm-hmm. He says, Tyus, you look good in all those races, and you look like you might be able to win a medal. I said, might be. That's in my head, I said. That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Temple. So 100 meters, my best friend, who's Edith McGuire Duvall now, but she's from Atlanta. She was picked to win the 100 meters and the 200 meters, to win three gold medals like Wilma Rudolph had done 4 years prior. Mm-hmm. And she was right next to me. And so they shoot the gun, we go off, and I'm out there for a minute, and then I keep going, where is Edith? I know she has to be here somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going to worry about it. I just kept running. And then I could hear her. I could hear her breathing, so to speak. And I was like, and then next thing I know, the race is over. And but I knew she was right there. And I didn't know that I won. And she went, Tyus, you won, you won. And I was so surprised. And so that was my first medal. And then I was standing on the victory stand in 64, and I'm going, gosh, I got to do this in 4 more years. And then I went back. 4 more years later, Mexico City, and it was so many things going on there. I had graduated from college. I had obtained one of my goals. My goals was to graduate from college, which I did, Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones would go to the Olympics, and here it is. I made the Olympic team to go to the Olympics in 68. And after making that, we were there, and it was just a time where people thought I was too old to be running at that time. I was only 23, but I was too old. And in this day and time, they run into their 40 or better.
Yeah.
But so everybody was saying, she's an old lady. She can't win this. She can't win this. But I felt like there was no way I was not going to win it. And I was really, when it time for the 100, for the finals of the 100, I felt so confident. I was, I don't know if you remember this, but Archie Bell and the Drills had a song out called The Tighten Up.
Mm-hmm. I remember the song.
Yeah.
My mom used to play it. Yeah.
And also they had a dance at the time that was called The Tighten Up.
Mm-hmm.
And just before I got in my blocks, I did that little dance. I told some people that I was going to do that. That's how good I was feeling about myself. Mm-hmm. Right before the dance, before the start of the race, I was doing my little tighten up dance. And that was to loosen me up so I could win this 100 meters and also to hopefully psych out some of my opponents, which I did, I think.
With the tighten up.
With the tighten up. Yes, absolutely. And then we went on to, I went on to win 100 meters. And doing that, which most people don't realize this, they get a lot of things confused on this. I was the first person ever, when I won that 100 meters, mm-hmm. to win back-to-back 100 meters ever. Never male, never female, nobody from another country. I was the first person to ever do that. I won the gold medal in 100 meters. I won it in 64 and came back and won it in 68. Never, ever had been done before. And most people say, oh, no, that was somebody else did that. No, I was the first one. First one, first woman, first black woman, all of those things.
Oh, my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Maria Boynton talking with none other than the incomparable Wyoming Attias Olympic gold medalist. She is a four-time Olympic medalist, holder of multiple world records, a longtime advocate for global human rights and women's equality in sports. Of course, her new memoir is Tiger Bell, the Wyoming Attias story. How was it writing the book? You have all of these accomplishments. How long did it take to complete the book?
Well, it only took about 2 years, actually. I'm a co-writer, but it only took about 2 years. I really wanted to write the book for my coach, who's at Temple, and I was in the process of writing it, and he passed away 2 years ago, so I had not finished it. And it was for him and for the Tiger Bells. That was the name of the team we ran for at Tennessee State. And most people, I don't know if people know this, but Tennessee State was a powerhouse when it came to sports, women's sports and track and field. And you're talking about a man that has put over 40 Olympians on the Olympic teams. Mm. And he has won over 23 medals. 13 of those medals are gold. But we were all black women, so never got the real credit for that. You think about a person that's done this, think a coach that has done something like that. You know, where there'd be things all over. Everybody wouldn't be able to speak his name and talk about his what he has done. So for me to write my memoirs in connection with the Tiger Bells, because they played such an important part in my life. I met the Tiger Bells. I went to Tennessee State at age 15 to train under him at a track camp. And that's when I met these black women that were doing things. They were traveling all over the world. And I, you know, I grew up in Griffin, Georgia, thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do. Everybody mm-hmm. asks, what are you going to do when you grow up? I guess I could be a nurse. I guess I could be a teacher. But, you know, when I got to Tennessee State and met those Tiger Bells, they were talking about being more than that. You could be a scientist. You could be a doctor. You could be, you don't have to be that nurse. You could. And I'm like, I never thought in those realms. So I pay, you know, I think about the Tiger Bells before me. And the Tiger Bells just came with me, how much I give so much honor to them, because it was them that really made me want to do well, not only in track, but also in my studies. Because one thing Coach Temple always preached is that, you know, track, the sport will open the door for you, but education will always keep the door open, keep it wide open.
Wyoming Attias, tell me, you're from Griffin, Georgia, the daughter of a dairy farmer.
Yes.
How did you wind up at Tennessee State University?
Well, yeah, I grew up with three older brothers on mm-hmm. that dairy farm. And I used to play all sports with them, everything. And my parents were always very encouraging. They never let my brothers go, oh, she's a girl, she can't play. Mm-hmm. And my father would always say to them, look, she's just as good as you, if not better. And one thing he instilled in all of us, me and my brothers, is the fact that, hey, if you're good, they want you on your team. We're not trying to tell you you got to be the best, but if you are good, people, they're going to want you on your team. So I was always encouraged to do what I wanted to do and not to let, you know, if that was something I loved doing, I should do it, as long as it was not harming anybody. And we should not let people say you can't do it because you're a woman. That has nothing to do with it. It's all about how good you are. And that's when people watch sports. They watch to see how good the players are. And that's how my parents had raised me. And then that carried on to how I got to meet Mr. Temple, who's Coach Temple at Tennessee State. At 15, he saw me running in a meet in Fort Valley, Georgia, at a track meet there. And after the meet, he came up and said to me, hey, you look really good there, Tyus. I have this track program I would like for you to come every come to this summer. And I said, at 15, yeah, that's something I could do. mm-hmm. And it led to every summer until I graduated from high school, and he gave me an athletic scholarship. Now, when you think about it, oh, that's great, you got an athletic scholarship. We're talking 1963. No school in the USA was giving athletic scholarships to women. Tennessee State was the only school that was doing that. And you think about all the great athletes probably gone and passed that did not get an opportunity. We're talking about women now that did not get an opportunity to show their talents. And then came along, you know, so that pretty much did it for me. That's how I got to Tennessee State. That's how I got an education, not only a college education. I got another type of education. I was able to travel all over the world to learn about different people, learn about their cultures, and learn about all the different ethnicities of the world, and learn to appreciate people for who they are.
You're listening to Wyoming Attias. In 1968, she became the first person ever to win gold medals in the 100-meter sprint in two consecutive Olympic Games, a feat that would not be repeated for 20 years or exceeded for almost 50 years.
Yes.
Wow.
Thank you.
Coach Temple, Coach Ed Temple, how much do you attribute to his style of coaching to your success? Because he seemed to be saying, oh, we're not looking for greatness from you, but you showed him greater than great. Your success, how much of it do you attribute to his style of coaching?
I think all of it. I mean, Coach Temple really became like a father figure to me. My father died when I was 15. So when I went to Tennessee State at that first track camp, Mr. Temple was he just became a father figure to me. He was very tough. He was no nonsense and all those kinds of things, and which was okay for me because that's from my family. You know, they were really not so much strict, but they demanded nothing. You know, you do your best. Whatever your best is, you have to be pleased and happy with. And that was Coach Temple. And he played a role in that. He knew all his girls. He had a lot of girls on his team. And most people always associate him with Wilma Rudolph. But he had more than Wilma Rudolph on his team. The 1960 team in Rome, the whole relay team came from Tennessee State.
Okay.
And his style of coaching was that, you know, if you do these things, I think they'll work for you. And if they, you know, as long as you're doing your best, it works for you. And he always would say, we all have, you know, we all can't go and stand on a victory stand and win a gold medal, but we all can be in the game. We all can contribute. And I could appreciate that greatly.
And the legacy that Tiger Bells and Wilma Rudolph, that they parlayed to you all. What do you say about all of that?
Well, that's part of my book that I wrote. I want people to notice that here it is that these women were doing things. Not only were they doing things, they were also helping out. They were helping young women, showing them another way, what they could do, never giving up, and showing them. You know, as a Tiger Bell, this is what Tiger Bell, friendship, this is what it is. My best friend is Edith McGuire. We met each other when we were 15. And guess what? We're still best friends. We talk to each other every day.
Real friendship.
Yeah, real friendship. We have been that way and very close and will always be.
Do y'all still run together? Because you look well and fit and able to keep running.
I can run my mouth. I can't run anything else. I wish I could run, but you know, after I retired in 68, that was it for me. And then I went back and ran pro track for a while. But no, basically, I walk every day and I go and exercise, and that's about it. And eat properly, all those kinds of things, and stay healthy as I can.
Wyoming Attias, we're looking at the book again here, Tiger Bell, The Wyoming Attias Story. Thank you so much for being here. I am still in awe of your greatness.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. There is a photo here on the cover of your book, Tiger Bell, The Wyoming Attias Story. What race was this?
Oh, gosh, that's a relay race. And what happens with the cover, I was running with Edith on this relay, and they couldn't put her on a picture. But we were at a track meet, and Mr. Temple had split us up. We usually have wearing on the same team, but he split us up because he wanted to win the national championship. So in order to win the national championship, he had to get first and second in the relay. So Edith and I was running the anchor leg, and we get to the finish line, and they couldn't tell who won, whether it was me or her. And I kept saying it was me, and she kept saying, no, it was my team, it was my team. And they did give it to me, which I was pleased about that. But we went on to win the national championship behind that, yeah.
On page 116, it says, the Gold Dust Twins and Mr. Temple, there is a picture of two ladies with all these medals around your neck, and Coach Ed Temple.
Yes, that's from 1964, because Edith won three medals there. She won a gold in the 200 meters. She got second to me in the 100 meters, and we both were on the 4x100-meter relay team. So she got our team got second. So when we came back from Tokyo, they took these pictures of us with all that gold around our necks.
Getting that college degree meant so much to you, didn't it?
It did. I tell you, it was something. I knew my mother could not send me to college, and the opportunity to get a college degree. And when you think about it, also, I mentioned it in the book. In the time I was in school, in 1963 to 68, at the time I was in school, there was only 8% of women going to college. I'm not talking about black women. Mm-hmm. I am talking about 8% of women in the whole U.S. of A. that were in college. So you're thinking about an HBC school that have women going to college on an athletic scholarship and being able to go, black women that go to school, you know. And so I feel very honored, very lucky, you know, and blessed that I had that opportunity.
What do you say to those today who are able to go to college so much more easy, it seems, than what you were able to do in the 1960s?
Well, I'd say to them today, your opportunities are a lot better, a lot greater. I mean, when I was competing, and Mr. Temple would always say that now you have Title IX. And Title IX gave opportunity to the women to be able to go to college, to get a scholarship at all major universities, not even all universities. You have pretty much the same rights that men have, what they've always had. So when we were competing, we were Title IX. You know, that's what we were. Mm-hmm. So I say to every young person, every young man, it doesn't have to be just women. I just say, if you have an opportunity to go and it's something you want to do, college is not for everyone. But if it's something you want, then you should go after it. You know, you should set your goals high and know all the time you're not going to always reach your goals right on the first go around. But you have to always say, what did I do and what else I need to do? You have to be a planner. You have to be able to say, these are the things that's going to work for me. Because what works for me is not going to work for anyone else. And you see people out there, you go, God, how did they do that? Yep, they stuck with it. They put a lot of time in, and they are very happy with themselves. When you're not happy with yourself, there's a problem there.
Yes, she is Wyoming Atias, everybody. Talking about Tiger Bell, the Wyoming Atias story, her ghostwriter, Elizabeth Terzakis. The book, Tiger Bell, the Wyoming Atias story. So happy to have you here today. Wyoming Atias was born and raised in Griffin, Georgia, not far from Atlanta. And she attended Tennessee State University in Nashville, ran track under the tutelage of legendary coach Ed Temple as a member of the Tiger Bells until she graduated in 1968. She's been talking about how important it was for her to get that degree in 1968 because she knew her family couldn't send her to college. She is the holder of 3 gold and 1 silver medal. She was the first person to win the 100-meter dash in back-to-back Olympic Games. We're talking about 1964, 1968. She was also a supporter of the Olympic Project for Human Rights during the 1968 Olympics, doing her part to promote justice for oppressed people around the world. And one thing you said was it afforded you the opportunity to be able to travel, to be an ambassador.
Yes, I was an ambassador in 66, I think. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. To Africa. Coach Temple and Edith McGuire and I, we were given ambassadorship to go to Africa and to put on clinics. And also the biggest part of it at that time was to encourage women to get involved in sports. And that was part of our ambassadorship, to make sure we encourage women to get in sport, put on clinics. She let them know that you can run. One of the favorite things Mr. Temple would always say when we were putting on clinics, there would be a lot of guys, a lot of men there, of course. And they were, one time we were out there running and demonstrating, and one guy said, no woman could beat me. No woman. If a woman beat me, I would kill myself. And Mr. Temple said, well, we don't do races. We don't do it. And he just insists that we had to run against him. Well, Edith and I both beat him. We don't know what happened to him. He ran off the track and not to be seen for a while. So, but we, being an ambassador was one of the best things that happened to me.
tennis great Billie Jean King, who, of course, had her own battles during that time when we talk about gender. She is quoted at the top of your book saying, Wyomia Tyus has earned her place in the pantheon of American sports sheroes and heroes. To have Billie Jean King write that about you, what does that mean?
Well, it's a great tribute. I really appreciate it. You know, Billie Jean King and I met at the Women's Superstars. There were activities. I mean, this was something that was going on many years ago. And we were all, not just Billie Jean King and I, but there was other athletes like Donna DeVerona. It turned out we were sitting around having dinner. And when we were sitting around having dinner, we were talking about how women don't have the opportunity to do a lot of the things, but be competing in sports, and they don't get encouraged to do things. And we have met people that said, gosh, I wish I had someone that was encouraging me when I was running or when I was playing tennis or whatever. And we were just talking about that. And then we came together, seven of us, and we created what we know now as the Women's Sports Foundation. And also coming out of that, we get Title IX. And get Title IX passed. So all of that just started, just all of us sitting around talking about what opportunities or less opportunities we had, and coming together and putting our heads together and making it happen.
So much in sports now is making the news. First and foremost, we can talk about Serena Williams.
Yeah.
The situation with her in tennis, top player in this country. Around the world, everyone knows who Serena Williams, matter of fact, everyone knows who she and her sister, Venus Williams, are. Back from maternity leave, trying to be ranked again, coming, you know, after being number one, having to fight to receive a ranking, having to fight for what she wears on the court, being accused of cheating. When it comes to women and standing up for their rights, for what they feel is right, do you think we have a long way to go in trying to be heard and being heard and honestly being heard? And when it comes to comparison with the males, what do you feel about all of that?
Well, yeah, I think we still have a long ways to go. I feel this way, that we're better in numbers. When we have just one person talking and speaking out, then people can kind of push that aside. But when you have a lot more people saying, you know, this should not happen, or we need more sports. That's how they got this is how we got Title IX. A lot of people start to speak up. A lot of people start to say, and what has happened to Serena? I mean, you think about it. She and her sister, I mean, I know her from California, and then that they have, their dad said when they were very young, they're going to be the best in the world. Now, for somebody to say that and then go ahead and prove it, and they came to be that. And they are women that are strong black women. And they both speak their mind in different ways. Serena is the one that really speaks her mind by expressing herself through her talking. And the things that have happened to her, you know, she get tested, drug tested more than anybody else, and all those kinds of things. Why they do this, I don't know. I mean, do we think it's sexism, racism, and all those kinds of things are involved right there? We're talking. And how she dresses and what she wears and all of that. I always feel it's, do you want to see a good game, or are you talking? Is that what she's out there playing the sport? She's doing a great job at it. She's putting on a great show, so to speak. But she's doing what she loves to do, and she's doing it with beauty, grace, and all of those kinds of things. Now, all the other kinds of things that are out there, we still need other people to help with all that. These things are happening here, and some people agree, some people don't agree. But those that do agree, well, they have to speak up, too. Because we need more voices. And we've found over the years, when you out there in numbers, things change quite quickly.
During the times that you were competing, and we're talking to Wyomia Tyus. Ms. Tyus, during the times that you were competing, there were some things that were going on in this country. Mm-hmm. Things that some people want us to forget, and some people say we will never forget. We're talking about the civil rights movement. What role did you play in all of that?
Well, the role is, you think, I grew up in this, you know, Jim Crow South.
Right.
And growing up in Georgia, you know, I grew up during the time of, you know, whites, colors, and all of that. So I started out with that. And my parents used to always say, you know, it's not always going to be this way. You know, you have to fight for what you want. You have to believe in what you want, and you have to fight for it. And going to Tennessee State and being able to meet those Tiger Bells, those black women that was fighting for what they wanted and what they believed in. And that gave me a lot more courage to be, to say what I feel inside and say what is wrong or what I think is wrong, and to fight not only racism but sexism also. Because as black women, we were not that encouraged to be. And when we were out on the athletic field, no matter what it was, it's like, oh, look how she looks. She's too strong. She's too muscular. Well, they don't say that, you know, just because they have an image of what an athlete's supposed to look like. We're all different. We're all different. No matter what sport we're in, we're all different, and we all come in different colors and all those kinds of things. So I came up with that. And then in 1968, we were talking about the going to the Olympic Games. They were talking about black boycott. And it came out to be the Human Rights Project. And the Human Rights Project was about not just black people. It was about all people of the world, and then what was happening all over the world. Because in 1968, just before the Olympics, we were talking about what was happening in Africa, South Africa. We were talking about what happened in Mexico City with the killing of the students there. And then we're talking about what happened on the victory stand with John Carlos and Tommy Smith.
You were at the Olympics when Tommy Smith and John Carlos held their fists in the air, right?
Yes.
What was it like?
Well, it was that moment. Well, a lot had led up to that moment. And we were talking, the black athletes were talking about not going to the games. And we had meetings, and everybody couldn't decide on what, you know, we decided, okay, we're here, so what are we going to do? And when they decided, everybody can do whatever they want. I was right in the stands when they went to the victory stand. I was right in a little area where they held the athletes, where you could see the meet if you went to the meet. And they walked past. As they walked past the stands where I was standing, I looked down and I'll go, they don't have their shoes on. What's going on here? And then you see them walk up to the victory stand, and you see them stand on their victory stand, and they receive their medal, and then they put their fist in the air, and the whole stadium got quiet. I mean, it was like nothing. People were just not saying anything. And as the national anthem continued to play, you could start hearing the rumble. And then I was like, I got really afraid, actually, because I'm like, wow, that's powerful what they just did. I hope they don't get hurt. Then I'm thinking about my safety, what crazy person could be out there. I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, what they did was quite powerful. And you first heard nothing, then you heard people talking, then you also heard people booing and whistling and all those kinds of things. So I was like, oh, wow, what's going to happen to them? I hope nothing happens to them. And then they came off, and, you know, we were all yelling, hey, way to go, and all of that. And it was just a powerful moment. And people said, well, what did you do? I said, well, most people don't know this, but I dedicated my medal for the relay because I had won the 100 already. Mm-hmm. And when I won the relay, I dedicated my medal to the Tommy and John Carlos. Also, I wore black shorts the whole time.
Should also let people know that you, Wyoming Atias, was honored with the inaugural Dr. John Carlos Legacy Award just a few weeks ago.
Yes, I was, and I was very surprised because he kept saying, well, you have to come to this, you have to come to this. I said, I have so much to do, you know, I'm on this book tour, I can't do it. He said, you have to come. So I went there, and I was quite surprised, and I'm really speechless and still is about that because you get awards and all that, but an inaugural award, and it was just wonderful. I mean, I've known, you know, Carlos for a long time. Yeah.
John Carlos, when you think of him, what do you think of his legacy?
Well, I mean, it speaks for itself, pretty much. Everybody, I mean, as soon as I mention his name or you see him, the first thing goes up is people put their fists up and they say, what way to go, what you did, what, you know, and it's something that people can identify with. I mean, it's kind of like now we're with the kneeling on the knee. I know John Carlos is a big supporter of Kaepernick, you know, and I just know that he's always been a person that has fought for human rights, and that's what life is all about, and that's what we all should realize. We all have to fight for human rights. Everybody deserves human rights.
In 1968, Wyoming Atias became the first person ever to win gold medals in the 100-meter sprint in two consecutive Olympic Games, a feat that would not be repeated for 20 years or exceeded for almost 50 years. Her book, Tiger Belle, chronicles Tyus's journey from her childhood as the daughter of a tenant dairy farmer through her Olympic triumphs to her post-competition struggles to make a way for herself and other female athletes. And in your, and you're in Atlanta because you're being honored, too, by Georgia Tech.
Yes, I am. A conversation with Wyoming Tyus.
What does it mean to you?
It means it gives me an opportunity to talk to some hometown people. People from Griffin can come and see me. And some of them, I've never had a talk like that in Griffin or anything like that. So it gives them an opportunity. And also gives me an opportunity and give other... an opportunity to express myself and also talk about my book to say that this is what made me, and I had my struggles and I overcome my struggles, and I think that everybody can do that, whether you're male, female, or whatever. And just because you are in a place that are not honoring you or you're not getting what you think you deserve, you do not let that deter you. You keep on pushing.
Wow. Wyomia Tyus, it has indeed been an honor and a pleasure to sit down and have a conversation with you.
Thank you very much, and I've totally enjoyed it.
Everybody, her book is Tiger Belle, the Wyomia Tyus story, a story of the Tiger Belles from the Tennessee State University.
That's right.
Okay. Everyone, thank you for listening. I'm Maria Boynton.